Tigers using this off week to try some players at different positions. We'll tell you who. Kirby Smart said the greatest fans are in Athens. Well, ask Vandy, because 32,000 filled up the 39,000-seat stadium, and you're not going to believe what happened before halftime. The Saints versus the Cowboys. What are the keys? And we'll take a look at all the big games in Week 5 of college football with Michael Huguenin. Today, Wednesday, September 25th, 2019.
We all know this is a game of consistency. Sometimes it's four, sometimes it's six, sometimes it's seven, and sometimes it's 8 days. You play another one, and you got to be at your best. And he's aware of that. He played a lot of football in college for a really, really fine coach. So he understands the process, and that's part of his charm, too.
I'm not on really social media, so I don't really know what's out there. But again, I tell my guys, like, really all the only thing that matters and is important is what happens on the practice field and what's going on in our meetings and our walkthroughs. You know, good, bad, or indifferent, doesn't matter what anyone else is saying. It really shouldn't affect anything we're doing in the building.
Not a lot of evidence relative to what they've been doing for a long time. It's about a game and a half. So I think you see them try to do the same kinds of things that they've always done. I don't know there's anything dramatically different. The guy playing quarterback for him has been a really good player in this league for a long time. It was a high pick. He's been a starter. So I think they have real confidence in him to be able to do anything they want to do.
That was Coach Garrett of the Dallas Cowboys talking about Teddy Bridgewater, who was emotional and thankful. I mean, the guy never thought he'd ever get to play football again after that horrific injury. And now he's back and he's starting and he helped the Saints win by taking care of the football and not turning it over. He'll have another chance to start him up Sunday night in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome when the Saints take on the Cowboys and time. And with that, we say good afternoon and welcome. Hope you're having a great hump day wherever you may be. And thanks for making us a part of it here. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, which is Acadiana's number one sports station. Yours truly, your humble host, Jordy Hultberg, here in Studio 1A. Great to be with you. Our guest list today, Tony Barnhart of Mr. College Football will join us, followed by In the Trenches with Chris Truax, everything about the LSU Tigers. Hour number two, our Hot Topics segment leads things off. Then John Hendricks of Forbes Sports will join us to talk about the Hoodats and the New Orleans Saints, followed by Michael Huguenin, Hump Day with Huguenin, talking all things college football. Ed Orgeron met with the media. He had his SEC teleconference call, and we've got some sound ready for you. Here's Coach O in his opening statement and what he had to say about the Tiger Nation.
Today was Tell the Truth Monday on Tuesday. We watched the tape. We talk about the things that we did well. There's a lot of things we did well. Talk about the things that we must and will improve. The team was in good spirits. We had a very light workout today. And tomorrow we're going to go and pass. Thursday we're going to be in helmets only. And the guys are going to have the weekend off. This week we want to make sure that we catch it up on academics. We catch it up on our rest. I want our guys to be fresh starting for Utah State next week. Any questions?
One of the big moments when the media was available to watch some practice, noticing Ed Ingram back on the field. He is good to go. He'll be ready to take on some responsibilities against Utah State. Here's the coach welcoming back his offensive lineman.
Yeah, there's no question. I think he looked fantastic. He's been working out. He's lost some weight. Gave our team had a little pep in the step. They all cheered for him when we announced that he was back today, so I think it gives us a sense of confidence up front, in a sense that we can do some things up front with other guys. It gives us more depth.
That other guy is going to be Adrian McGee, who remains the starting left guard. But when you listen to Coach O, it's probably likely that Ingram is going to eventually earn that spot.
Could be. He has to beat him out, though. He has to beat him out. Right now, McGee is on the starting spot and has no second team. And let's see if he beats him out. Now, if he does beat him out, it's probably going to happen. As we know, Ed's a really good player, so is Adrian. We could use Adrian as a utility guy, right tackle, right guard, left tackle. He can play anywhere.
Mark it down. It's not if, it's going to be when. The staff broke down a lot of tape. Ed Orgeron said that they missed a whole bunch of tackles, and they've been working on technique, footwork, and tracking as they've been working on getting better at tackling.
Gap fits. The first one was just a gap fit. Two of the big runs were on a gap fit. Now, we lost the A-gap one time. We lost the B-gap the other time. And the next thing was technique on tackling. And it wasn't a matter of effort. It wasn't a matter of want to. It was a matter of fundamentals, technique, footwork, tracking, where we're going to go in the tackles. We studied 18 missed tackles yesterday. Myself and some analysts, we called some people on tackling. We came back this morning. We had an extensive day on tackling. The coaches came out here. We practiced tackling with the coaches and how we're going to teach it, and we taught it today. So I do believe it would be better.
18 missed tackles that resulted in 148 yards for Vanderbilt. A lot of people are saying, hey, defense is not getting enough rest. The offense scores in a minute 48 in their scoring drives. So the defense gets little rest, puts a strain on the depth, but Coach O said, we ain't slowing down, I can promise you.
You know, what's different is the scoring drives are averaging 1 minute and 48 seconds. So that's not a lot of rest on the sideline. So when we have a quick scoring drive, we're going to have to make sure that guys are fresh, or we may have to substitute guys. We just got to regulate that. We're not going to slow the offense down. There may be a time where we have to slow the offense down, but when you score 66 points, you got to let them go.
Turn them loose, Coach O. Don't you dare slow that offense down. So what if you give up 38 points? You're putting 66 on the board. Who cares? Just keep scoring. Don't worry about that. You got enough offense to go around. Terrace Marshall out for some time. So how flexible is Stephon Sullivan? Tight end to wide receiver, back to tight end. Now he's back to wide receiver.
Yeah, we're going to move Stephon outside, let him play. And I think that'll be something that'll be good for Stephon. It'll be good for our team. Our tight ends have played well. I think Stephon will step in there and play a big role. I do believe those other guys are going to step it up. I think we will be fine.
Racy McMath seems to be the third receiver now that Marshall is out to go along with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase added to the Biletnikoff watch list as the top receiver. LSU's had one Biletnikoff award winner. That was Josh Reed back in the day. Another potential move involves Christian Fulton. Coach O talked about that.
Yeah, we may do that. We can play him at nickel. We can play Cornell Flott at corner. That could be something that we will experiment with this week.
So they're experimenting and doing a lot of self-evaluating, and that's what you do at this time. And so the Tigers are practicing today in pads. They'll practice in helmets only on Thursday. It'll be short and sweet, and then he'll turn them loose. The staff will go out and recruit. They'll watch Thursday night games, Friday night games, and don't be surprised if Coach O goes to watch his son, who's the quarterback, I believe, at McNeese State, on Saturday. So using the time wisely, and then it's time for Utah State. And look, put 40-something points up against Texas. Their defense isn't very good. Haven't played a really top-shelf defensive club yet. It's coming. It's coming. After Utah State, you got Florida. You got Auburn. You got Bama. So at least you're going in there now with bullets, right? You're going in there with some targets and some weapons. We'll ask Mr. College Football about LSU, Tony Barnhart, next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Always fun when we can catch up with Mr. College Football himself to get a kind of a landscape of the Southeastern Conference and all of college football. And, of course, we're talking about Tony Barnhart. Tony, good afternoon, buddy. Thank you so much for the time. How are you?
Jordy, I'm great. Hope you are, too.
I am. I'm watching this LSU offense set all these records, averaging 57 points a game, and I keep looking up at the sky to see if pigs are flying.
What I keep thinking of is, and I think I may have mentioned this to you, when they're running the ball up and down, throwing the ball up and down the field on Texas, Odell Beckham was sitting in a hotel room somewhere going, "Now you do it? Okay." I'm thinking about all those great LSU wide receivers over the last 10 or 12 years are sitting this watching this thing unfold and saying, "Man, did I come along at the wrong time."
Is it sustainable? I mean, 80% completion percentage, scoring on touchdown drives, an average of a minute and 48 seconds.
Well, it is sustainable, but you do have to concede that the better defenses on schedule lie ahead.
Yes.
You have to look ahead and say, okay, Utah State, yep, that'll be a track meet. I've seen Utah State play in a game earlier this year. They like to move the ball up and down the field. So that'll be a track meet. Florida will try to slow it down. Auburn will try to slow it down. Alabama will try to slow it down. And the rest of them won't be able to slow it down. But those three games, you know, you got right now, those three teams play some real defense and they'll try to slow it down.
Yeah. We'll find out. LSU's offense has changed. One thing that hasn't changed, how about this stat? Vanderbilt didn't have enough beer at their home stadium for LSU fans. The Tigers drank Vandy dry before the end of the second quarter. Go ahead, Tiger Nation.
There's a stunner right there. So, you would have thought Vanderbilt had learned its lesson because Georgia was there the first week. You know, they said, "Well, you know, hey, when these teams come in, we got to have a lot more beer." I'll tell you a place where they didn't run out of beer was Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium because I was there and there was plenty of beer there.
Tell me about your thoughts after watching Georgia and Notre Dame play in a game I thought was a lot closer than I thought it would be.
No, Notre Dame is better than I thought they were. They were much quicker early, particularly in the first half. I am watching them run to the ball, and Georgia, with maybe one of the best offensive lines in the country, had a tough time blocking them. But Georgia knew going in to that game that depth would be an issue with Notre Dame. Notre Dame knew going into the game that depth would be an issue for Notre Dame. So the game really unfolded the way that Georgia thought it would. You know, got a little tight there at the end, but Georgia got tested and passed the test, which is what it was all about.
It looked like Nick Saban was coaching over there at Georgia. I mean, it's like a really good defense, special teams that flip the field, and offense just don't screw it up. Before he changed and got Tua and got into this high offense, this looked like Saban back in 2013, 2014.
Well, I tell you what, Georgia's pretty good. And I think it's going to get real interesting down the stretch here. Georgia's got an interesting finish to their schedule. They got to play Florida here in November, but Georgia's last final stretch of games is Florida, Missouri, Auburn, Texas A&M, and Georgia Tech. They play those five teams in five consecutive weeks, and that will be a tough finish for Georgia.
He is Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football. You like Auburn? That defense is really good. That was impressive what they did in College Station.
Yeah, it was. And I thought a really good win for them. And, yes, Auburn has a great defense, maybe the best defensive line in the country. The key for Auburn is, you know, thus far Gus Malzahn has figured out how to use his freshman quarterback, not to use him too much. Don't ask him to do too much. Ask him to do just enough. Control of the football. I wonder what's going to happen when they play a team that can just virtually stone the running game and make Bo Nix throw it over and over and over again. I think that will be the interesting time for Auburn. Oh, by the way, to go to Florida, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, that's going to be the first big test of the freshman quarterback and Auburn's ability to do what they want on offense.
Yeah. Tony, there's a lot of people in Gainesville saying, we feel badly for Felipe Franks, but we feel like we got an upgraded quarterback with Trask. Are you in that camp?
Well, I wouldn't say an upgrade. What I would say is it's a different approach to the game, much more methodical. I will say this: they look to be a more efficient and more a little bit more consistent play. Now, you're not going to get the big plays that Felipe Franks could give you when he took off running, at 6'5", 240, to pick up some of these first downs. But Kyle Trask is a fascinating story. I sat in the office of Doug Nussmeier, who used to be the offensive coordinator under Jim McElwain there, and he told me about Kyle Trask. He said, this guy, nobody recruited this guy. They were, ironically, Florida was recruiting De'Eric King, who's suddenly in the news. He went to the same high school. He was De'Eric King's backup, and Florida was, of course, recruiting De'Eric King, and they kept looking at this backup kid who never made a mistake, who always made the right decision, and they invited him to camp, and they gave him a scholarship from the camp. So this is a guy that I've been told for years that if he ever got an opportunity, he'd be pretty good. Well, guess what? Unfortunately, Felipe Franks got hurt. He got his opportunity, and he looks pretty good.
Tony Barnhart joining us. Can Chad Morris salvage anything at Arkansas, or should he just – cut bait and get out of town?
Terms of winning,
they're terrible.
You mean in terms of winning games?
Anything.
I'm sitting here looking at the schedule. Listen, who are they going to beat? Western Kentucky? Well, they lost to San Jose State.
San Jose State?
Okay.
Yeah,
they're just not very good. They knew the roster was in bad shape when Chad Morris came in. They thought they had fixed the quarterback room, and they really haven't done that. Nick Starkle threw 5 interceptions. just totally unbelievable. I don't see a whole lot of hope. Now, what you got to do is you got to be patient. You can't make a change the second year. You hired Chad Morris because he had 14 years of experience as a high school coach in Texas and can recruit. And you got to give him a chance to recruit because the Arkansas place was just a train wreck when he got there.
Who do you like, Kentucky or South Carolina this weekend?
You know, interestingly enough, I was doing some of my research here, and South Carolina, Kentucky is a 3-point favorite in that game, and so that's going to be interesting. It's at South Carolina. South Carolina just got taken to the woodshed by Missouri last week, and so man, this is a game that both of these coaches need to have. I got a feeling that Kentucky's won 5 straight against South Carolina, and that is a sore point for the Gamecocks. I think the Gamecocks find a way to win this game.
All right, I feel back to Arkansas. I feel sorry for them because Texas A&M's coming to town, and people are saying, "Do we have a $75 million mess on our hands with Jimbo Fisher?" I mean, it's so early, but the Aggies are going to go in there. Show no mercy. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Well, and the reason they have to do that is they've got to build some momentum because guess who's coming to town in a couple of weeks? Texas A&M has got to build a little momentum by beating Arkansas. They're going to play in Arlington, Texas. Then they get a week off. Then Alabama comes to town on October 12th, and that's the game that everybody's been pointing to. They didn't expect to lose to Auburn, obviously, playing at home. But you got to start with some momentum against Arkansas. And I agree with you. I think they'll put a big old number up on these guys.
One last question before we let you get out of here. The De'Aaron King situation that you mentioned about now at Houston, four games in, he said, okay, we're 1-3. Things aren't going so well. I'm going to redshirt. Your thoughts? You like it? Dislike it? Is it going to be a trend?
Well, A, I don't like it. This is not what the redshirt rule was created to do. And is it going to be a trend? Well, I certainly hope not. I just don't think that many starting – it's one thing for your backup quarterback who's lost his job like Kelly Bryant to do that and to so he can have an opportunity to play his senior year. But it's another thing for the starting quarterback to say, you know, this ain't working out so well. And to get the blessings of apparent blessings of the head coach who says, well, you know what, we'll be a lot better next year than we are this year, and I'll still have my quarterback.
Right.
Jordy, you mark it down right now. That dude ain't coming back to Houston. I'm telling you, he's not coming back
to Houston. No way. I agree.
Where he'll be.
I agree.
I don't know if he'll be at Oklahoma or he'll find somebody else that needs a quarterback, but he will, because he's not a perfect fit for what Dana Holgorsen likes to do. So I'm telling you, he will not be back.
He is Tony Barnard. He is Mr. College Football. We greatly appreciate whenever we can get you. So thank you. Enjoy week 5 of the college football season, my friend. Thank you.
Bye, Jordy. You bet. Take care.
All right. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax after these messages and Peterbilt of Louisiana. Look. They've reigned as America's premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer since the company's founding back in 1939. They've done this by delivering high performance, low maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Peterbilt of Louisiana has offices in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. We've got new truck sales, used truck sales. We lease them. We've got a service department, and we've got every part you could ever imagine. Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. We'll be back.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
You're looking for the perfect RV park? Then look no further than True Lodging RV Park, 996 Main Street, Hackberry, Louisiana. Let me give you the number. It's 337-287-0631. 337-287-0631. They've got everything you need. Sewer and water hookups, on-site laundromat, high-speed internet, bathroom and shower facilities, restaurants and grocery stores are nearby. If you like to hunt, to fish, to birdwatch, if you're in the natural gas business and looking for a place to stay, True Lodging RV Park is the place to go. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have been there that just say it's the best. It is the best. 337-287-0631. Chris Truax, former LSU offensive lineman, former college football offensive line coach, amongst other things, kind enough to join us. Chris, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Oh, George, man, just loving Hackberry. I've been sitting out on my LSU bench out in front of the laundromat, a matter of fact, watching you know, the birds moved down and just having a gorgeous day. And earlier this morning, I was over in your neck of the woods over in Bro Bridge and happened to go by probably one of your little spots. I know it's not locked yet, but if you're over in Bro Bridge, go to Poche's. You been to Poche's in Bro Bridge?
Yes.
What a winner. I tell you what, great little spot, man.
Get your gas and all your travel needs from D.C.'s little capital Exxon right there in Bro Bridge. All right, now.
Right.
If I had told you, Chris Truax, if I had told you back in the day that LSU was going to be scoring, averaging 57 points a game, what say you?
What planet are you living on? You know, what happened to 3 yards, a cloud of dust, and great defense? Now we're slinging all over God's creation, and we can't stop nobody. So the Earth's axis is tilting in one way or the other, you know, and maybe that's where this season goes, Tori, that we just outscore people this year.
Offense gets a little bit better, and Ed Ingram is back for the offensive line.
Fantastic.
He's going to have to beat out Adrian McGee. But you know Ed Ingram. You've watched him play. Tell me his strengths.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, he's a bona fide all-conference player. He was on that track. Obviously, he's got some baggage, some you know stuff that he's got to put away and focus on his school, his education, and his football. And I'm glad the young man got back on the field for us because he makes us ultimately better. But let me tell you something, McGee's going to be tough to beat out. I really believe that. And maybe that gives us some freedom now, you know, maybe to move somebody over, maybe try somebody else to the right tackle spot. Mm-hmm. I don't know because McGee was mauling Vanderbilt. I mean, he was like a one-man wrecking crew out there. But having Ingram back is a great blessing, especially, you know, got a little open day, little Utah State, and then, you know, Florida. So the timing is really perfect getting him back in offensive rhythm.
We're talking with Chris Truax, former LSU offensive lineman. You've coached the game before. Tell me about this. Everybody's commenting. LSU's scoring so quickly. Ed Orgeron did a study. They're averaging a minute and 48 seconds per scoring drive. Everybody's saying the defense is on the field too long. They're getting tired.
Sure.
Talk to me about that.
Well, you know what? Normally, Jordy, most football games are usually broken down into 13 offensive series, maybe 14, maybe 7 per half, okay? Well, you know, and usually averaging about, you want to average about 70 plays on defense, and if you feel good about your two deep, your starters are getting around 50 plays, your backups are getting around 20, and that's a good four-quarter football game. Everybody's fresh, everybody's excited, everybody's got energy the last 3 to 4 minutes of the ball game. But right now, you know, I don't know how many plays our defense averaged against Vanderbilt, but I know, you know, they had 85 plays against Texas. And defenses around the country aren't built on going, okay? Now, with that in mind, you know, the third down conversion rates from Georgia Southern, from Texas, from Northwestern State are probably a lot higher this year at this time than they were last year. So that's a stat I'd like to see, what opposing offenses' third down conversion rates are, because you know that. You've got to get off the field. You got to win on third down and get off the field. And at this moment, we're not winning on third down to get off the field, hence more defensive plays.
Chris Truax brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. It's the best RV park around for all you hunters and fishermen and bird watchers and those involved in the natural gas business. There's lots of business out there. If you're looking for a place that's very affordable, very clean, very neat, True Lodging RV Park is the place to be. Joe Burrow has basically come from nowhere. Nobody was even talking about Joe Burrow before this season. And now he's a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate, and I believe a legitimate possibility for a first-round pick in the NFL draft. It's been a remarkable four-game stretch for this young man.
You know, the young man, exactly. He has had a great first part of the season. And hopefully, I think, with having an offensive line, you know, I think with just got with the addition of with Ingram back, his offensive line just got immediately a better impact on it. You know, we're going to have to run the football at some time because I know we've got Utah State, which is a good, solid program. And I know a lot of people probably don't know about them. And it'll be another, you know, probably a big night numbers game for Joe.
Right, right.
But then we got the Florida Gators coming to town. You know, and Florida's got the two leading sackers in the SEC. They got a D lineman who is, you know, can tear you up, and they've got a linebacker. I mean, they've got three of the top five sackers in the SEC playing for the University of Florida. So, you know, being able to pick up that pressure and knowing on third down you've got to get on an opposing defense that can get to you, that might trigger some stuff. You know, may alter his game a little bit better. But his decision making, and Jordy, what I love about watching Joe is his vision downfield. He can step. He has the presence. He can feel the pressure. And I think the really good quarterbacks, you know, Tommy Heinsohn had that ability. But to stay focused on his reads, he could step up, step back, slide to the right, slide to the left, or worst case scenario, leave the pocket, which Tommy wasn't a great runner, so he always liked to stay in the pocket. You know, a barrel can beat you with his feet a little bit. So, you know, you've got a two-dimensional, you know, I can say three-dimensional because he can beat you in the passing game, he can beat you running the football, and then the best thing about it, he can beat you mentally. He knows. He's so well prepared. And once again, hats off to LSU coaching staff. He's so prepared through the first four games that, you know, his maturity and his leadership and his ability to make bigger plays are going to just grow stronger and stronger as the season advances.
Yeah, Chris has made the offensive line better. The offensive line, I think, has played great so far this year. But we're all concerned about defense. Ed Orgeron came up after the Vanderbilt game and said that, in looking at the film, 18 missed tackles. Why is tackling an issue with LSU defense all of a sudden?
Well, you know, Jordan, it's a great question. And I tell you, what you really showed, and it was a great example. You know, a lot of defenses, they want the ball back. They want turnovers. Lamar, you know, the turnover game is the big deal. You got the ball more than your opponent, you're going to win. And you can see those guys trying to strip the ball instead of making fundamental tackles. Guys are getting on an edge, trying to punch it out or trying to rip it out. So, you know, so that's, you know, doing kind of what they're taught to do from what I'm seeing. But, you know, I look at the parity and I think about this. I would think the parity between Southern Miss and Vanderbilt would be probably a pretty productive football game, right?
Okay.
I think you're a very common opponent. Well, Alabama held them to 7, and Vandy put 38 on us.
Okay,
so I think we're still kind of, I know everybody's excited and so forth, but we've got the meat grinder coming up here in a few weeks, and then hopefully we're having these great conversations every Wednesday about this. But, the fundamentals have to get fixed. I know we still have last week, you know, the Lawrence kid, his ankles still bother him. It bothered him last year as well, too. You know, you got the Chasson young man who was supposed to be, you know, preseason All-American, and he's a little dinged up at this point. I think one of the linebackers. Then you had a safety that's out, I believe, as well. So, I mean, you know, it's hard to really – maybe that's why we're playing a lot of man coverage on defense, because we're not getting the pressure with our front four. So, you know, Coach Aranda wants to try to get some more pressure. But once again, if you're still not – if people are picking up your blitzes, because we didn't sack Vanderbilt one time, okay? And I didn't think Vanderbilt was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were a competitive team. And it's just like, hey, Vanderbilt didn't recruit you, and they didn't recruit me because we couldn't make 1,400 on the ACT or the SAT, right?
Speak for yourself. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you had all coaches your senior year in high school.
Oh, Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. We know that Joe Burrow, if the season ended today, Joe Burrow is the offensive MVP. Who's the defensive MVP for the Tigers?
Nobody showed it yet. I don't see one. I really don't. I know Delpin had a couple of great games early on, but he's kind of gotten quiet. There's nobody right now that is the premier playmaker on third down. You know, last year, who was our guy? It was Devin White, right? I mean, hands down, we knew he's on the field. He's going to make a play. It's kind of like the offense field about Burrow. We know if he's on the field, he's going to make a play. He's going to win the game. But I don't see an outstanding. Maybe that's good. Maybe they're playing more together as a team. Or, you know, maybe all the recruiting reports and all that kind of stuff aren't, you know, the five stars aren't the five stars. The four stars aren't the four stars. You know, I mean, I was never a big fan of all those recruiting services and all that stuff anyway. But I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, does somebody come to your mind as far as a standout on the defensive side right now, Jordan?
I may have to give it to the freshman, Chris, Derek Stingley Jr. I don't know. He's been the most impressive defensive back, and I may have to give it to him. But you're right.
Teams,
you can't replace.
You know?
Yeah, you can't replace a Devin White, but some of the linebackers haven't stepped up yet, although Patrick Queen's leading the league in tackles, but I was shocked when I read that. I didn't even know that.
I did not know that either. And, you know, so that's good. I mean, if that's a guy in the middle of the core behind the defensive tackles that's leading, and that's really a defensive tackle's job, is to control the line of scrimmage so the linebackers can either fill or scrape over the top or get outside of the tackle box and make a play. So maybe, you know, our defensive linemen are doing what they're taught to do, but we just don't have that guy right now that's really collapsing the pocket to make a quarterback that's stressful in those third down situations.
I mean, you're putting 66 up points on the board. Should I be concerned that you're giving up 38? I mean, 66, who's going to keep up with that? I guess when the bigger teams come in, we'll see.
Well, you know, when Vanderbilt puts 38 on you, I think you got a problem. I mean, I really do. And I don't know if it just goes back to fundamentals, but I don't see. I knew we were going to score a bunch of points against Vanderbilt. But I sure didn't see. I really didn't. I thought maybe we'd give up maybe 7 to 10 points against Vanderbilt. And I know they're playing a lot of new faces and new deals and on the road and all that. Vanderbilt wasn't scared. It wasn't like Vanderbilt was trying to cower down. I mean, they were playing hard. They were playing for Coach Mason and that football staff.
Yeah, I'll give the defense a little bit of credit because of the 38, 14 were attributed to the offense because of turnover. So the defense gave up 24.
Yeah.
So I'll give them a little credit on that. But they've got to get better. They got to. So how do you do tackling drills when you're trying to get people fresh and keep them healthy, but you got to have contact? That's the fine line I can't understand.
Jordy, they have an inventory of tackling dummies, tackling drills, technical eyes, hands, and feet drills. They've got these, you know, these tackling donuts, basically they, you know, roll in front of you or to your ankle or, you know, behind that you've got to fit in right and wrap both arms around it and kind of bring it down. Okay. But it's just really more of a fundamentals. You know, getting in a proper, you know, stance, getting in a, you know, like a running back, picking up a blitzing linebacker. I mean, it's, you know, basically getting a power clean stance and, you know, being strong through your hips and up to your shoulders and all that good stuff. But, yeah, no, they've got drills for that. Yeah, you can't pound and beat up everybody every week and go out there and be 100%. But at this stage, you know, going into Florida, they probably still have a good, strong week of practice this week. They'll have another good one against Utah State. But, you know, when Florida comes around and stuff, it'll probably be more that NFL mindset, a lot of shorts and T-shirts because, I mean, you're almost halfway through the season and, you know, you can't afford to lose anybody because these games are, you know, the conference games obviously matter for everybody.
Tell me how beautiful the view is in Hackberry right now. How beautiful is it?
Brother, it is 88 degrees. It's 20% humidity. You can see the teal move in. Unfortunately, the hunters are moving in, too. So when the hunters move in, the teal, somebody's making a damn good duck gumbo tonight, I can promise you. You know, so, yeah, but you should be with it because the laundromat, heck, work on a broken washing machine right now. So that's what we're doing here this afternoon, but enjoying a beautiful day here in the Big Berry.
That's awesome. Chris Truax joins us each and every Wednesday. Thank you, my friend. Safe travels.
You got it. 10-4. Talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll take a quick timeout. 2:49 on this Wednesday, September 25th. And I'll tell you, before we go to break, let me tell you about another great opportunity that we have here. It's the Opelousas Rotary Club Auction, which returns October the 1st from 6 to 10 p.m. live on KDCG-TV. Hundreds of items will be available to bid on, everything from furniture, sports memorabilia, household items, hair care, vacation packages, gift certificates, home decor, and much, much more. So make sure to call in October the 1st. Get a head start. Save on all those Christmas presents. Did you know that most gift certificates at the Opelousas Rotary Club auction are going to be discounted 50 to 80% off? And all the proceeds go to charitable causes. The Opelousas Rotary Club auction returns October 1st, KDCG-TV. We'll return here on the Jordy Helfrich Show after this.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
And we welcome you back at 53 minutes after the hour. We asked you to submit photos of your ugly recliner for a chance to win a brand new recliner from 103.7 The Game and Bordelon's Home Furnishings. And we got some great submissions. We chose five finalists, and now we need your help to decide who should win. Take a look at 1037thegame.com, then vote for your favorite. Voting will take place until September 29th, the year 2019. Training camp for the Pelicans begins next week. David Griffin spoke to the New Orleans quarterback club. He said he had 17 players on campus for 3 weeks. I've never seen that many guys in advance of training camp anywhere. This group has been all about it and all about each other. I kind of like that. And when describing his team, Griffin said, we're going to be long. We're going to be youthful. We're going to be energetic, and we are talented. So we'll be the fastest team in the NBA. We're crazy long. We're crazy athletic. We're young and full of energy. How about that? Meanwhile, on the college basketball front, Andy Katz kind of knows a little bit about college basketball. He said deep run potential in the NCAA tournament from the SEC, Kentucky, Florida, LSU, Auburn, and Tennessee. So that's pretty good as well. Quite an accomplishment for LSU long snapper Blake Ferguson, who's been named a semifinalist for the prestigious William Campbell Trophy, also known as the Academic Heisman, the National Football Foundation announced today. And if you think pro players don't care or they have no emotions, listen to Teddy Bridgewater as he held up a game ball and he addressed his teammates in the Saints locker room after the win against Seattle.
Hey, man.
Huh?
I just want y'all to do one thing, man. I'm trying not to ball right now, but, man, cherish this moment, man. Cherish these opportunities that we got. Cherish this feeling of winning and just, man, never take it for granted. Hey, I'm so speechless, but, man, I would not have rather been anywhere else than here. Experiencing this right now in this moment with you guys. So, man, I appreciate you guys, man, for accepting me. And, man, I love y'all. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
From a guy that never thought he may never play the game again, he's holding up a game ball, winning an NFL game on the road. That's an awesome feeling. And this team is now galvanized. I look for them to play a great game against the Dallas Cowboys, fueled by that crowd. Holy Toledo, Ben. And when we do our On This Day in Sports History today, you'll hear that crowd because it was one of those magical moments that we will never, ever forget involving the New Orleans Saints. That's coming up in hour number two, along with John Hendricks of Forbes Sports and the Canal Street Chronicles, who will talk about the Saints picking up an old familiar face to kind of secure their linebacking core and their special teams play. And Michael Huguenin will join us as well. Hump Day with Huguenin. Not a great slate of college football games, but still some really good ones, particularly on Friday night. It's all coming your way. Hour number two of the Jordy Hultberg Show, straight ahead here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
Yeah, I'm looking for the new Saints scratch-off from the lottery.
You want just one, or would you like to play the field?
Oh, hey, I'll play the field.
Let's go! Come on, jump!
Whoa! Those players just came off those tickets, and they're playing a game on the counter!
Play the field with $5 We Are the Saints and $2 the New Orleans Saints scratch-offs from the lottery. Win up to $100,000. Check out LouisianaLottery.com for information on second chance prizes. Must be 21 to purchase.
And that's how you play the field.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two. He says, not going to happen. Urban Meyer, when asked about the rumors of him succeeding Jim Harbaugh as the coach of the Michigan Wolverines, if and when that does happen. But he is listed as the odds-on favorite, 3-2 odds, to become USC's head coach in 2020. Go figure. We'll see if Urban Meyer, who right now is doing work at Ohio State, he's doing studio work for the Big Ten Network as an analyst and doing work with Fox. Urban Meyer's only 55 years old. He's going to coach again, right? All right, we do it every day at this time of day. We take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, if you don't mind, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Well, Alex Bregman gets another home run. Your Astros are rolling. My Cardinals are in there. The Yankees are tough. It's going to be a really good Major League playoffs when it gets here, and it's not very far away.
Exactly, Jordy. We're wrapping up the penultimate series with the Seattle Mariners tonight and then getting ready, I believe, for a three-game set. I think it's against the Oakland A's to wrap up the year. Regardless, right now they got the best record in baseball, so it's feeling pretty good to be an Astros fan right about now. But I want to kind of carry on what you were talking about earlier about the rumors of Urban Meyer to Michigan. How about these rumors, Jordy? And I'm going to throw you your way. We're talking about Michigan. Why not jump over to the Pac-12? I mean, he's already kind of got the cushy job on the West Coast. I could wind up seeing him possibly being with a USC Trojans team that feels like maybe, just maybe, they'd be the next person to fire their head coach.
Well, I said it. He's a 3-2 odds favorite to become the head coach at USC. I mean, he's been at Florida, pretty big SEC school. He's been at Ohio State, pretty big Big Ten school. And USC would be right up his alley if he does want to coach again. I don't know. You know, he's got this this cyst that he has to deal with that's caused some headaches and caused some problems on his brain. And so I don't know. You know, he says he likes what he's doing right now. He did say going on a break after the 2010 season at Florida was a mistake, but he likes what he's doing now. His family likes what he's doing now. And he said, all that matters is my family. If they're happy, I'm happy. We'll see. I think he's still young. I think he's going to coach again. I really do. And we'll see if Clay Helton gets it certainly seems like Clay Helton's not going to make it, whether win or lose. They got rid of Lynn Swann as the AD. They got a new AD coming in to hire the new coach. I'm sure they will. They'll go after, see if Nick Saban wants to bite, and I'm sure they'll go after Urban Meyer.
Exactly. They're going to have to wind up biting on some of them. And you talk about the next head coach at Michigan, potentially, if Harbaugh is out. I think you definitely don't have to look far. I'm sure a Michigan man like Les Miles wouldn't mind taking that Wolverines job. Do you think that could happen, Jordy?
No. I mean, Les is getting too old in the tooth. I just cannot fathom how Michigan would let that happen. We'll see. I don't think so, no.
All right. Flipping on over to the New Orleans Saints, Jordy. Interesting news coming out of their end in terms of a acquisition. Former first-round pick for the Saints making his way back around. Stephon Anthony, Jordy, making his way back to the Saints roster. Announced earlier today. It's kind of weird to see him be a former first-round pick and then they trade him to the Dolphins, and now he's back again.
Yeah, you never burn your bridges, right? You always leave copacetically. The reason he got traded, that was, you know, all part of that Jimmy Graham deal back in the day, but he was injured, and he just never really developed. So maybe the second time around, you get a second chance, and maybe he'll make the best of it. We'll see. We'll see.
It's going to be fun to see what happens on that end, Jordy. I was definitely like, when I saw that, I was like, wait, what? Like, he is getting another chance with the franchise after kind of having a ho-hum career at this point in time after being a first-round pick. I mean, mind you, the other linebacker they got later on in the draft, he turned out way better, but injuries derailed him. And a lot of those were the fact that his injuries happened a lot in college as well. And we're talking about Haole Kikaha, another name from not too far ago land.
Yeah, you know what they always say, the best ability is availability. If you're not available, they're not gonna pay you not to do the work. So we'll see. We'll see what Stephon can do this time. He gets an opportunity on a really good team. And with DeMario Davis leading the way, maybe he steps up his game and can contribute. He's teamed up with his old special teams coach from their time in Miami, who's now the special teams coach for the Saints. So, you know, with Lutz kicking off and Morstead punting, special teams a very integral factor of this club's success.
And don't forget about Deontay Harris, Jordy, with his punt return for a touchdown against Seattle. That special teams crew is absolutely phenomenal. And sticking with the NFL, let's go to former LSU Tiger. It feels like when it rains, it pours when it comes to the New York Jets and leaving WFAN interviews on the table and just canceling them altogether, with former LSU star Jamal Adams canceling his weekly show after questions last week talking about what's going on with the social media accounts, how he took the Jets out of his Twitter and Instagram bios and sidestepped a lot of the questions, then decided, you know what, I'm not going to do those interviews anymore. Are you on his side or you're on their side where it's kind of hard, like on the radio personality side, where why are you doing this now and why not just finish up for the year and then not do them again after that?
It's not like Jamal Adams is not getting paid to do those interviews. So you don't want to interview? We ain't going to pay you. Plain and simple. So that's up to each individual whether they want to do it or not. If he has thin skin like that sometimes, hey, there's ways to handle questions. He ought to be skilled enough to know how to handle that. And any journalist with any integrity is going to ask those difficult questions. You just have to man up, answer them, and move on. Now you run away from it, so I'm more on the radio side than the player side. But you know what? If you don't need the money, okay, don't have to do it. We'll find somebody else to take your spot, and we'll pay them to answer the questions.
Exactly.
Plain and simple.
Exactly, Jordy. And last one before I let you go with this, and it's a little more fun, involving the Cajuns and App State game coming up in a couple weeks. It's the big one, midweek ball game, 2 weeks from tonight, in fact. It's be between the Cajuns and App State. It's ladies' night as well, Jordy. And we all know how big of a deal the $3 beer and the $1 hot dogs have been. It's definitely been a great success. My question to you, Jordy, is this. How awesome is it for ladies' night? $3 White Claw, $4 wine, and $5 margaritas for that ball game in 2 weeks.
I think that is awesome. The kudos to the marketing department for the Raging Cajuns for coming up with the ideas. Let's pack the house. And you know how things go. You know how men are. If there are attractive women, and there is a plethora of them in the Acadiana area, if they're there, the men will come. So, ladies, show up, show out, and let's pack the place. But first, you got to get past Georgia Southern and keep this train rolling in the right direction. But, hey, that should be fun. So, how are we going to do this show? We got to do something special for that on a Wednesday night. We got to do something special for that game with this show.
So we'll figure something out.
Let's get our collective brains together, get with management. Let's figure out what we need to do on this thing because Raging Cajuns deserve it. All right, there's your Hot Topics brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, Cajun Chef. Do yourself a flavor. Get some Cajun Chef hot sauce and bring it with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Saints Talk next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. The New Orleans Saints getting ready to get back into it this Sunday night when the Dallas Cowboys, it's got to be the game of the week, terrific matchup on NBC primetime Sunday night. Let's talk about the New Orleans Saints with our contributor from Fox Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. Does a tremendous job, and John Hendricks joins us again. Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. Hope you're doing well as well.
We are. If I hadn't seen the Saints versus the Seattle Seahawks, and I asked you for a Cliff Notes version, how would you summarize what happened on Sunday in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, I would tell you, first of all, the Saints got off onto a very strong start. Basically, I would tell you that the defense held their own on the first drive, and the Saints finally got some really good results, what they had been hoping from their undrafted rookie free agent in Deontay Harris in the return game. And the Saints, again, were able to kind of – they weren't able to move too well after that, but then they got a really big break after the score was tied at 7, got a defensive touchdown, and then just kind of was in the momentum chain all whole way from there. They got Alvin Kamara, was just brilliant on the day. The defense, although they couldn't bring down Russell Wilson, generated a ton of pressure. The final score there was nothing indicative of how the actual game went. Pete Carroll was outcoached by Sean Payton. The Saints, Teddy Bridgewater, looked really good, all things considered. And Saints went up there in Seattle in a hostile environment, got their first road win up there since 2007.
It's got to be one of the more gratifying wins considering all the circumstances surrounding it. In the Sean Payton era, particularly on the road.
Yeah, look, I think any time that you come up there, and obviously we know the controversy that was surfacing this team, right? No Drew Brees. This team can't win without Drew Brees. Defense got to step up. We've got Teddy Bridgewater. He hadn't started mm-hmm. a real game that's meaningful and, you know, ever. And all these other narratives that, you know, people wanted to push or say or bring up or anything. And, you know, the bottom line is Bridgewater, he hit well on his short to intermediate routes. I know some fans were kind of a little bit upset that he didn't take any deep shots or anything, but, you know, he kind of goes back to the other week that Drew Brees had kind of told him specifically, like, just take completions. That's all that you need to do. Take completions, manage the game correctly. And I think that's a lot of what you saw, really. And you know, again, you don't want to see him force anything, but, man, I tell you that it is astounding to see this team rally around him. And, look, given how Bridgewater's, you know, career has evolved up until this point, you got to be happy for a guy like that.
No doubt. We're talking with John Hendricks. Apparently, Caden Ellis has a season-ending injury, and the Saints are bringing back somebody that I didn't see it coming, but former first-round linebacker Stephon Anthony. He's going to be reunited with special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi. They were together in Miami, so he gives support for the linebacker crew, and he helps on special teams. I didn't see this coming. Did you?
Definitely didn't see it coming. If you would have told me one of the players that would reunite with the Saints this season, he would probably not have been anywhere close on my list. I probably thought like Nate Stupar or somebody like that. But, man, you know, look, again, you know, all things considered, losing Caden Ellis is a big blow. I mean, he's a guy that came in here and just did exceptional work throughout training camp, and he was making his mark on special teams. Anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20 snaps a game on special teams, and he's going to definitely be missed. And now you bring in Anthony, and, you know, I guess, if you will, some of the good news is you're not going to ask him to be in coverage or anything like that or do anything out of the ordinary. But, look, you got Darren Rizzi here, and I saw was a quick reunion, and you definitely have a need there. So, look, if Anthony could be that guy on special teams for you, then I'm all about it. But definitely a very big shot today.
No question. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. I remember a year ago the Saints and the Cowboys met up back in November, the tail end of November. The Saints were on a roll. They were the best team in football, and all of a sudden the Cowboys came up with a formula, beat the Saints 13-10. Saints still could have won the game, but, boy, Drew Brees threw for 127 yards. They limited the ground game. They really came up with a plan to shut down the Saints. What do you remember about that game?
Well, definitely didn't have their best showing on offense. And look, you know, I think it was a defensive slugfest. I think there was a lot of somewhat controversy on some of the officiating there. I definitely remember that being at that game. So to some calls that could have went that way, didn't go their way. Cole Beasley, I remember him distinctly getting awarded a first down when he was nowhere near the marker. I mean, just stuff like that,
yep.
right? And
yep.
so that happens. Right. It's unfortunate. But, you know, bottom line is they didn't win the game. Good thing is it wasn't anything long-term. They would come back and they were able to respond from that game. So, look, I think you got good defensive matchups both sides of the ball. I think you're looking at, you know, I think the onus is more on the Saints defense to stop the Cavaliers offense here, in my opinion, just because you got Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott, and everybody kind of singing the praises of Kellen Moore as their offensive coordinator right now. So, look, I think they'll come up with a good game plan. I think they'll go back to some of that film like they did last year. But, look, this is a tough place to play. You know, Superdome, Cowboys have come in. They've only won twice and since, what, 1998? Or maybe it goes back a little bit further than that. But, you know, it'll be a good matchup, that's for sure.
It'll be a physical one. There's no question about that. Boy, I love DeMario Davis. I mean, he is wow, what a pickup by the Saints. What a leader and what a ball player, right?
Yeah, look, I you know, we kind of felt that. I mean, just coming in that, look, he's a guy that's really underrated and continues to be underrated. It kind of reminds me of Cam Jordan, right? Is that, you know, Jordan's a guy who constantly got overlooked when you had a lot of things come up. And Davis, I feel like he's another one that got overlooked on a lot of things too. But, man, the Saints are looking amazing with him in the middle. Probably the best linebacker since Jonathan Vilma. Coincidentally came from the Jets as well.
Yep.
So, look, I think he's been working late and then some. And then carrying the team on his back, you know, stepping up for Drew Brees. He said he had messaged him and it was between him and Cam Jordan. And so he took the reins and he delivered a very good, inspiring message that rolled off to the team, and that's what you want to see. And there's a reason he's a defensive captain, along with Cam Jordan, and he loves playing in New Orleans, I'll tell you that.
I think another unrecognized player, but who's getting some credit now, the special teams player of the week in the NFL, Thomas Morstead. He might have had the best game by a punter in Saints history on Sunday. The numbers, 6 punts, 52-yard net average, 4 downed inside the 20, 2 inside the 5. He had a long of 64. He constantly flipped the field, and he did it in the rain. I mean, how about that?
Yeah, look, you can call Greg Zuerlein Legatron if you want, but we'll just call, you know, we all know that Thomas Morstead is the leg around here. And look, man, it's something just to see him get better with age, kind of like a fine wine, right, or anything like that. So it's one of those unsung things, right, when you look at matchups and you're talking about hidden yardage or you're talking about other types of areas where you can really make a leg up and forgive the pun, if you will, but just to be able to have a advantage over the competition. But look, they got it with Thomas Morstead. He's been doing this for years, right? And you couple that with Will Lutz, it's
right.
Almost you know, fans that have been a fan of the Saints for a while remember the great deal of Tommy Barnhart and Morton Anderson. I think they kind of have their own version of that with with Will Lutz and Thomas Morstead.
No question, John. You tweeted out that Carl Sheffers and crew will be officiating the Cowboys-Saints game. What do you know about Carl? And because we mentioned it last year against the Cowboys, some of the calls not so favorable. Saints finally got a couple of good calls against Seattle. What do you know about Carl Sheffer's crew?
So, if I remember correctly, I think he called the Eagles-Saints playoff game. So that was his last Saints one. From what I recall, it was pretty one-sided. I think there was only 4 penalties on the Saints. There was like 11 or 13 on the Eagles on that one. So he's not too bad. I mean, you know, obviously it's still officiating, but, you know, last time he had called a pretty clean game, I think. And, you know, that's what you hope for. But, you know, anytime you get the Saints on the national stage, officiating is obviously going to be a sore spot. And I think these officials know it by now. So
yes.
They got to tread lightly going into the Superdome.
Yeah, they got a shot at this one, don't they? I mean, they're at home. Bridgewater getting more reps. I think you'll see more of Taysom Hill in some way, shape, or form. It's going to be a very physical game. They got a chance to win it. If you had told me they could be 2-0 without Drew Brees in Seattle and against Dallas, I'd say no way. But I think there is a way now.
Yeah, look, and if they can come out of this thing in September 3-1, I mean, goodness gracious, that's going to be a huge win, right? Especially when you don't have somebody like Drew Brees. And, you know, look, I think this game obviously is going to go either way. I think given that this team won in Seattle last week, they got a little bit more chip on their shoulder coming into this week. And I think it's going to show on Sunday night. And, you know, the Superdome crowd is going to be absolutely ridiculous. And Dallas is going to travel well. That's a game where a lot of those Cowboys fans circle, and they'll make that trip to New Orleans, kind of like New Orleans does to Dallas. And, look, you know, if they can get there, you've got pretty favorable over the next few after Dallas. You know, you're looking at having Tampa, and you got Jacksonville on that slate, Chicago and Arizona in the month of October. So, definitely no gimme games, if you will, but at the same time, I think it stacks up in this team's favor if they can knock off the Cowboys, who've got this stigma to them, even though they're 3-1 and haven't really played anybody, that they can really be taken seriously again.
We will see. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicle, thank you so much for your time, buddy boy, and keep on tweeting and enjoy the ball game on Sunday night. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll take a timeout here. That brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. For all your travel needs, they've got it in that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. That cheeseburger is just mouth-wateringly delicious. DC's Little Capital Exxon I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Michael Huguenin, college football, next.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Oh, the man that knows college football inside and out, kind enough to join us yet again this week. Michael, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing quite well.
What was the most impressive performance for you in week four? Was it Wisconsin's demolition of Michigan at home? Was it Auburn's win over Texas A&M on the road? Or was it Notre Dame's hanging in there tough between the hedges in Athens?
I actually think it was USC with its third-string quarterback beating a very good Ooh. Utah team. Now, obviously, Utah Ooh. Had some issues because they lost their starting running back, but if you're USC, you've heard all off season, okay, our coach is going to get fired. You lose your starting quarterback, then you lose your number two quarterback. Mm-hmm. You're down to your third string guy, who looked really good. Matt Fink looked like, man, this guy was third string. Oh my God! So I think USC was impressive. I think Pitt beating UCF was impressive, and I think Auburn's, that was a demolition. I know the mm-hmm. final score was 28-20. It was a 28-10 game with 8 minutes to go, and Texas A&M was thoroughly beaten. They scored twice in garbage time to make it look a little bit more palatable, but Auburn's defense, their offense is not good. Their defense has won them two big games. I don't think Oregon's bad, and I don't think A&M's bad, and yet the Auburn defense throttled both. That is a really good team. And you and I talked before the season, Auburn always seems to be at its best when no one thinks they're going to be any good. And no one thought they were going to be that good this year, and Auburn is a legit top 10 team.
Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, brought to you by Peterbilt. Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the envy of every truck driver that had to own a Peterbilt truck. I've got to ask you about LSU. You've talked about them coming into the light and coming out of the old Neanderthal ways, but 57 points a game. Okay, I know it's not against Auburn, it's not against Florida, it's not against Alabama, but it's still playing college football. 57 points a game with a quarterback who came from nowhere, basically, who's in the Heisman Trophy talk and possibly a first-round draft pick in the NFL.
Yeah, Joe Burrow has adapted quite well to the new offense. Obviously, Joe Brady deserves a ton of credit. And I think right about now, if you're an LSU fan, you're saying, thank goodness Joe Brady got here. Now, oh, my goodness, is he going to stay? Because this dude could be an offensive coordinator somewhere next year. But, you know, beating Vanderbilt 66, okay, they scored 45 on Texas. They crushed Georgia Southern. I mean, this offense is going at an extremely high level. Joe Burrow's completing 81% of his passes, thrown 17 TDs. The receivers, you know, I don't think LSU has a true stud receiver. It doesn't matter. Burrow's doing a great job of spreading things around, and these receivers are a talented group. Now, Marshall getting hurt, that could be interesting. But Chase and Jefferson are extremely athletic guys who look really good in that offense. And obviously one of these guys is going to have to step up to replace Marshall. But the idea that, oh, Marshall's hurt, this offense is going to grind to a stop, obviously that's ridiculous. So, we talked a little bit last week. You look at Alabama, you look at LSU, and given where those teams were 5 or 6 years ago, I think the biggest question with both is the running game and the defense. But the thing is, it's going to be hard to outscore Alabama and LSU because they both throw the ball so well, and that's the mind-blowing aspect of this. Alabama and LSU have passing offenses that are the envy of almost every school in the country, and that's, frankly, mind-blowing.
So are you buying stock in LSU for the rest of this year?
Yeah, I think the defense, you know, I said a little bit last week, they're giving up 38 points a game. You know, they give up 38 to Vandy. So what? I mean, right. I got to think that if you're a defensive player, we've scored 66. If Vanderbilt scores 38, we can live with that. Now, obviously, the defense is going to have to get a little bit more. They're going to have to batten down the hatches when they play better teams on their schedule. Right. But, you know, I mentioned Auburn earlier. If I'm an LSU fan, I ain't scared of Auburn's offense at all. I don't care. The key is if LSU's offense gets cranked up, they're going to score in the 30s against Auburn because their offense is that good. Maybe Auburn holds them to high 20s. That's fine. I'm still confident in the LSU defense doing a job against Auburn. The one team, obviously, that everybody at LSU cares about is Alabama. And the Alabama offense, the passing attack is scary. But for the first time in since Jeff Wickersham or Tommy Hodgson was there, the LSU passing game is scary.
Michael Hugin of The Athletic. All right, let's get to some of the games this weekend. I don't know if it's a great weekend of college football. We have some, I think, I call them sneaky good games, starting with Friday night, number 12 Penn State at Maryland. Maryland started out guns ablaze, and they're putting up 70-something points. Kind of came back down to earth, but they're at home. This ought to be interesting, right?
Yeah. Maryland, the last time we saw them, they were struggling big time against Temple. The offense really sort of fell off the table. I think, though, that they had last week off, and presumably they made a couple tweaks. Josh Jackson, maybe his legs become a bigger deal because that guy was a true dual threat when he was at Virginia Tech. He really hasn't been asked to run that much in Maryland. Let's see what happens. Penn State, I think defensively, is the best team Maryland's played, but I'm still not sold at all on Penn State's offense. So I agree. I think that's I'll be honest, I think there's three really interesting games on Friday. There's Penn State, Maryland, Duke, Virginia Tech, and Arizona State, Cal. Cal's the only unbeaten team left in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Not a very good offensive team, but a really high-level defensive team. And I mentioned Duke, Virginia Tech. There's a lot of angst among Virginia Tech fans about Justin Fuente. When he was hired, that was seen as, what a home run hire for Virginia Tech. Great job by Virginia Tech AD Whit Babcock. Now there's folks saying, you know something? Fuente really hasn't done much here at all. Maybe it's maybe he's not that good a coach. And if they lose to Duke at home, all those naysayers are going to come out in force. And I think the folks that are on the fence about Fuente would jump to the side of the fence that was, yeah, Fuente's not that good. Maybe we need to move on from him.
Michael Hugan of The Athletic. I don't know. Rutgers is probably going to get fired their coach. Butch Jones apparently is interested in that job. Good luck with that. But Michigan, what's going on with Michigan? And is it trouble for Harbaugh?
Yeah, they looked pitiful last week. And I think it's fair to lump them in with LSU because those two schools, the past decade, were always really good defensively. And in the crunch time, their offenses failed them. Well, LSU talked the talk about, okay, we're changing our offense, and they've walked the walk. Michigan talked the talk about changing their offense, but you watch them, I don't know what their offensive identity is. Shea Patterson looks horrible. Horrible. I still think that Shea Patterson is talented. Yeah. I think it's a bad fit at Michigan for him. I think he's questioning what he's supposed to do on every play. He's not out there. You know, when he was at Ole Miss, I think it was sort of, in a way, he's just played ball. And I think at Michigan, he's thinking too much and not just playing ball. Michigan looked horrible last week. Wisconsin, right. You know, the final margin was 21. Wisconsin, I think, lost interest at halftime because that game was over. And I think there's questions about, you know, what's Harbaugh's long-term viability at Michigan, because the one thing that he was supposed to be great at, quarterback coaching, it hasn't shown up since he's been there. So you're right, they're going to crush Rutgers. Rutgers is pitiful. But you look at Michigan's remaining schedule and you're thinking, you know something, maybe this is a 9-3 or 8-4 kind of team. They opened the season in the top 10, and they were picked to win the Big Ten. They're not even going to win their division, and that's not good for Jim Harbaugh.
Michael, it may not be an interesting game, but I've got to wonder, Texas A&M fans are thinking, did we make a $75 million mistake? And Arkansas fans, I don't know what they're thinking about Chad Morris.
Yeah, Arkansas, I actually thought they potentially could get to a bowl game. Win your non-conference, steal one or two in the league, and how good are Ole Miss and Mississippi State anyway? After watching Arkansas on Saturday night, I'm not sure they can get to three wins. San Jose State, which was coming off a beatdown at the hands of Tulsa, took it to Arkansas, and Arkansas could not respond. And, you know, I'll be honest. John Chavis used to be a high-level defensive coordinator. Those days are long, long gone. Nick Starkel threw interceptions like he was a kid giving out candy on Halloween. They just look really, really bad. And I think Chad Morris is a good dude. I think he's got a good offensive mind. But as with any coach, if your quarterback can't play, you ain't winning games. And I don't Starkel. You throw five picks at an SEC game, okay. You throw five picks against San Jose State, maybe you're not an SEC-level quarterback. And I think perhaps they gave up on Ben Hicks too soon. You're right. And Texas A&M last week, their offense, abysmal. That's another game where, again, the final margin is deceiving because Auburn knew the game was over. A&M cannot run the ball against good foes. That showed up for the second time. The positive this week is Arkansas ain't a good foe. So Texas A&M will run the ball effectively and win easily. But I still think there are some questions about Texas A&M, mainly how high a ceiling does Kellen Mond have? And if it's not that high, I don't know how good A&M is going to be next year, which is the year they were shooting for to be really good.
Here's Michael Hugan in The Athletic. Number 18th ranked Virginia heading to South Bend, Indiana to take on the Irish. Irish are 10th ranked, coming off that tough physical but a game performance at Georgia. Maybe upset city here, maybe?
Yeah, I think Virginia is a well-coached team with a really good quarterback in Bryce Perkins. Perkins is a true dual threat. Still developing as a passer, but an extremely dangerous runner. And it's funny to me, Notre Dame, oh, my God, what a great performance by Notre Dame. It's almost like a moral victory. This isn't Tulane or Louisiana Tech. It's Notre Dame. And I think the Notre Dame players are like, wait a second here. We're not in the moral victory business. We lost the game.
Right.
And it's interesting that the national media perspective seems to be, hey, let's reward Notre Dame for playing close. Georgia still won the game, and I'll be honest. What was Kirby Smart doing kicking a field goal? Dude, you got tons of talent. Go for the jugular and end any doubt. And that, to me, I'm not 100% convinced that Kirby Smart's all that. And I think that's the latest example. So you're vastly more talented than Notre Dame, and by not going for the touchdown, you let Notre Dame stay in the game. And your defense has five-star talent all over the field. So what? Maybe you don't get the touchdown. Well, that means they got to drive what 95 yards or something. I was just he's coaching not to lose, and I think coaches that do that eventually are found out as not being elite level coaches. So Notre Dame did acquit itself well. They couldn't run the ball. Virginia plays pretty good defense. They don't have a stud running back or a stud receiver. That hurts. But Bryce Perkins, if Notre Dame has any hangover from that loss, Bryce Perkins is good enough to make them pay. So that is a very interesting game, no doubt.
Another interesting game, fresh off of a big win, the Trojans of USC at Washington to face the Huskies. 21-ranked Trojans, 17th-ranked Huskies. What do you like? Who do you like?
Yeah, Washington's lone loss came at home to Cal, and their offense was shut down. Jacob Eason is a really high-level quarterback. They got a nice group of running backs. The receiving core isn't that much, and I'll be honest, I don't think their offensive coordinator, Bush Hamden, is all that good. I still think, though, they're better than USC. And again, I think you got to give Clay Helton and his staff a ton of credit. They're down to their third-string quarterback, and they beat Utah. Now, Utah, again, was missing its best player on offense. Tyler Huntley, the Utah quarterback, is adequate. He's at his best when he has Zach Moss behind him. Moss got hurt, and that's why I think USC won. If Moss plays, I think Utah wins. But you got to give Helton and his crew credit, but I think Washington gets that win. But it's another example. The Pac-12 cannibalizes itself on a weekly basis. I mean, last week, one of the more incredible games I've ever seen in my life was UCLA-Washington State. They're down 35 points, or 32 points, and they came back and won. And that was a UCLA team that had been left for dead. Washington State was unbeaten, still had, you know, early on. But, hey, we're unbeaten. We're one of the few in the Pac-12 that's unbeaten. And then they lose. So, but Washington is a well-coached team. They're better coached than SC. So I think Washington gets that win.
It's the only time I think you could ever say a quarterback that threw nine touchdown passes was on the losing side of a game. That's hard to fathom. I've got to ask you this, Michael Hugan, in closing. The De'Aaron King situation and using this red shirt, four games, season's not going well. I'm just going to hang it up for the year. I want to come back next year. Is that going to be a trend?
Yeah, I think so. I think you saw players last year. Kelly Bryant played four games at Clemson, left. Now he's a starting quarterback of Missouri because he saved a year of eligibility. Yep. And I think you're going to see there's been a handful of guys who have done that this week. I think there'll be another group next week that does that. Oklahoma, for instance, was off last week. They play their fourth game this week against Texas Tech. I think you're going to see a couple, maybe one or two players at Oklahoma realize, I ain't playing here. I'm going to move on. They had one kid leave this week, a true freshman linebacker who never was going to play. So he left. You might see some upperclassmen do the same thing next week. Doesn't bother me. The De'Aaron King situation is obviously interesting because as soon as it was announced, it was like, okay, where is he going next year? And then an hour later, oh, he ain't going anywhere. He's just going to redshirt here. I still wonder if De'Aaron King, who's listed at 5'10",
I don't believe
like 5'9", changes positions next year also. So.
Interesting. All right. Enjoy a so-so week. week five of college football, but some interesting games on Friday for sure. He is Michael Hugonen, does a tremendous job at The Athletic. Always fun, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
All right, that brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. You can't shop right at ShopRite. You can't shop right at all. Oh, what a day in history it was. You'll hear it, and I know you'll remember it. Next. Welcome back. Finishing touches to this Wednesday edition. And we start things off like we always do with on this day in sports history. It was September 25th. The year was 2006. It was a big day in New Orleans because the Saints were returning to the Superdome, taking on their arch rival, the Atlanta Falcons. Early in the first quarter, Atlanta Falcons punter Michael Konen was back to punt. And one of the most dramatic moments in Saints history happened. Let's relive it now.
Michael Konen, who has made a headline for missing six of his eight field goal attempts this year, is now back to just punting and kicking off. The former Saint Morton Anderson is here for most field goals. Look out! Right through! A kick block by Steve Gleason! It is scooped and scored by Curtis DeLoach! Touchdown, New Orleans!
The crowd went wild. It never stopped. The Atlanta Falcons had no shot. Steve Gleason with a statue emulating the blocked punt. The Saints fans just looking for anything to hold on to bring them some happiness with all the devastation and destruction around them from that natural destruction known as Katrina. And they got it done that night. September 25th, 2006, Steve Gleason with the block punt that goes into the history books. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share your birthday with happy 52nd birthday to Will Smith. Yes, indeed. Mark Hamill, Star Wars, Luke Skywalker is 69 years young today. Holy cow. And Scottie Pippen. Oh, Robin to Michael Jordan's Batman. Happy 55th to Scottie Pippen. What a ball player he was. Yes, indeed. All right, special thanks to all of our guests today. Tony Barnhart, Chris Truax, John Hendricks, Michael Hugonen. CD, job well done. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. How about Steve Gleason?